Hello everyone, this is Tanya from 12 Element Yoga and Wellbeing. Thank you for stopping by and listening to our guest on Mind the Gap podcast. I am here to discuss real life issues that we all face or can relate to from our experiences of being blissful on the mat and the realities of the world off the yoga mat. As students, teachers, or professionals working in the health and wellness sector, we all have a unique journey and experience to share. From gym owners to face yoga experts, we discuss it all. Each episode will give you a guest with a unique story to inspire and uplift you on your journey into health and wellness. Be sure to connect with me at Mind the Gap on Instagram and check out my upcoming retreats and more at 12 Elements Yoga and Wellbeing. Thank you for listening. Whether you are out running, walking the dog with your feet up after a long day, or cooking a slap-up meal for your family, I appreciate you for listening to Mind the Gap podcast. Please like, share, and subscribe to be updated for new episodes bi-weekly.
So welcome to Mind the Gap, Rowena, from Australia. I'm in Belgium. And Rowena is doing my first ever Zoom podcast. And I'm so grateful and happy that you are here with me to do this, connecting together over the oceans. And it's been a long time, so I can't wait to dig deep. So welcome, Rowena.
Thank you so much, Tanya. It's such a gift to be able to be on here and obviously to reconnect with you after so many years. So I'm looking forward to it as well.
So let's start from the beginning and I'll talk a little bit more to give you more of an introduction as we move forward. But where were you born and where did you grow up?
So I was born in it's a city now, but it's Brisbane in Queensland in Australia.
Yes.
Yeah, and I grew up there, and then I moved to Sydney when I was 20 years old to study performing arts.
Right, okay. And acting as well, if I remember.
Yeah, it was acting, singing and dancing. So it was a performing arts degree with a man called David Atkins.
Okay.
So he's produced. He was famous for his production of Hot Shoe Shuffle, actually. And then
he's quite famous in Australia.
Yeah, and he won a Tony Award for it, and then he really went into producing after that. So he produced Chicago and a whole bunch of other things. Yeah, he's still around in Sydney, still doing his thing, I think. So, but you know, I'm a bit out of that industry now.
For sure. So, did you grow up in a spiritual or religious household?
Oh well, I guess I'd like to say that I grew up with no spiritual environment. Because my family, I grew up in a very tumultuous kind of violent environment. So to me, there was no spirituality going on at all. However, ironically, my birth father actually worked in a church. So to me, it was like this whole, so that was very much religion shoved in down our faces in a lot of ways, that we forced to go to church. And I hated it because I'm like experiencing all this violence and things with my family, with my birth father, and yet here we are at church preaching how, you know. So I really struggled actually with spirituality, more religion, to be honest, for a long, long time, you know.
Completely relate to that. You are many different things. So you're a naturopath, you're a neuro-emotional technique practitioner, also a shamanic healer. You also do our psychomatic body work, and obviously you're a Bikram yoga teacher. You also are a best-selling author of a book called The Joy of Real Food, which I actually haven't downloaded, so I really want to download and buy it off Amazon, actually, to read that. So I'm really excited about that. But I want to go back to your journey of where it all began when you first started. So where was your first yoga class? Was it Bikram or did you practice?
Well, actually, technically it wasn't Bikram. However, to me, it really was Bikram, you know.
Yeah.
When I was performing arts, we had to do yoga every Friday and I hated it.
Really?
Because I'd been a runner. So for me, to do stretching, I mean, I was flexible, but not compared to everyone else as a runner, yeah. as a dancer, because I was a runner. And so yeah, I hated it. I it was horrible to stretch. I mean, I love stretching and dance, but it was different. Yeah, not just very like, different. I just didn't find it inspiring. I found it boring. I was just like, oh, this is horrible. So if anyone had said to me, you're going to be a yoga teacher back then, I would never have believed it. But yeah, no, I did find Bikram yoga in 2004.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think it found me, to be honest. And ironically, I had heard about Bikram yoga twice. From
really?
Other yeah, someone from acting had said that their friend had started Bikram yoga, so I'd heard the name of it. And then another client of mine, because I was doing massage and stuff at the time or earlier, and a client of mine had mentioned Bikram yoga, and I was like, oh, what's this Bikram yoga, you know? And then, yeah, I literally, I was in hospital with eating disorder. I had an eating disorder, so I had a bleeding colon, and I ended up in hospital, and they thought that I had Crohn's disease. So I talk about a lot of this in my book. They thought I had Crohn's disease, and Yeah, but I didn't have it. It's ironic. They just thought that that's what I had because I had this bleeding colon, and I thought, oh, gosh, you know, she's got Crohn's. And I remember sitting in the hospital because I had this eating disorder for such a long time, and then I sat in the hospital and they said to me, we think you've got Crohn's disease. And I don't know what happened. I heard a voice. I'm telling you, I heard this strong, loud voice say, you don't have Crohn's disease. This is your wake-up call. You've got to change your life now. This is your change your life. And so what happened was I got out of hospital and I just started praying, and I just was like, okay, life, because I wasn't in the greatest space, you know. I'd been doing an acting degree for 3 years. I wasn't in a good space at all, you know. And then yeah, because I'd had all this stuff with my birth father. I mean, I went into a lot in my book, but I didn't really mention him for defamation reasons, but he's not alive anymore. But yeah, I had gone through a lot, and I'd had to get a restraining order on him, so that really took its toll on my life. And I was just a mess, and my eating disorder was like rampant. And then so I ended up in hospital, and then they said all that to me, and then I got out of hospital, I was praying, and then I just literally was walking down the street. And see, I had rheumatoid arthritis and all this before this, so there'd been a lot going on. Yeah, I couldn't walk properly, so I was walking in the street and someone called my name, and I was looking around like, okay, no one's there, this must be in my head. The same voice I heard in hospital, look up. And I looked up, and there was this big sign, Bikram Yoga, Lane Cove.
Wow.
I knew I had to go to that class, and I'm telling you that I swear it found me.
Yeah.
And I knew within 3 days I was going to be a teacher. And I just knew. I went, oh, my God, I found what I've been looking for. I just knew. And I loved it. It was so similar to the stuff I'd done in my performing arts degree. We had this amazing choreographer who was the head of performing arts, her name Jane Beckett, and she was so inspiring to me. And she was very spiritual, and we did a lot of visualization and meditation and stuff. But we had this, this conditioning class that we do every day for an hour and a half. And when I did Bikram, there were so many similarities.
Really?
There were so many similarities. And that was the favorite part of my whole entire performing arts degree, was doing that foundational thing that I just always felt so happy doing it, and I just loved it. And when I found the Bikram, I was like, oh, my God, I found the same thing almost, you know. So I just loved it from word go, and the energy I had, and I didn't want to emotionally eat, and I it changed like that for me.
Yeah.
It changed literally the whole trajectory of my life. I love it. Oh, could go on forever.
Yeah. And I love one of your phrases that you have on your website, and it's, your pain is your gift and your fear is your friend. So when pain became your gift, can you tell me, and when did fear become your friend?
I believe that, I mean, I went through so much trauma as a child, and I believe that that is the gift. Like that, people think all these things are terrible. Yeah. However, everything that goes on in our lives is what shapes our lives. Yeah. You know? And yeah. I believe, had I not gone through everything that I've gone through, it's, you know, they call it the wounded healer.
Yeah.
The wounded healer. And I believe that as someone that's helping other people now, it's that gift it's given me gifts of helping to have empathy for other people. It's given me gifts of understanding and having to walk life. I mean, I've had to do a lot of inner work to get through all the stuff that I've gone through. And that's such a gift, because it's made life richer. It's made my life like more expansive. It's opened me up. It's shone such an amazing light on my life for me. And it's given me the opportunity to then use that in service for other people. And, you know, yoga, you know, obviously it's about self-realization. So that's all part of that. However, a big part of, you know, big part of the whole yogic path is the karma yoga, your dharma, your duty on earth, what you're here to do. And that's the gift. Like it's given, I wouldn't be able to do the work, I don't think that I do, had I not gone through what I've gone through. So it's such a gift.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think in terms of the fear, I think probably the biggest thing that I look at with my fear and how, because I had such a fear of food, you know, emotional eating, binging, starving, I went on that was a spiral that was like 10, 12 years of my life. And
wow.
I wrote a book about healthy eating and how I love being in the kitchen and creating recipes, whereas I was petrified to be in the kitchen because that meant overeating, emotional eating, you know. And so I turned this fear of food into a gift of being able to heal my life,
mm-hmm.
and also then create all these incredible recipes that would just happen. I just create all these recipes and then share that with other people. So yeah, it was my fear of food, and then I wrote a book to inspire other people to help them through their challenges with food as well, you know.
And then with kinds of trauma that can be treated, obviously you deal with clients that have a different array of different traumas that they hold in their body, right? You do a neuro-emotional technique, shamanic healing, and body work. Are they all integrated? We're just talking before off camera, like how you keep studying. And I know you've done so many, I couldn't even put into the podcast how much training and studying you've done. And I'm sure even part-time what you love, passionate about. But when you actually do your sessions with someone, how do you conduct them?
Oh, so when someone comes to see me, I go through, obviously I have first of all, I have an online form that they fill out, and there's a lot of questions there that start to get things sort of, you know, bubbling to the surface for them, and it can confuse them. Like, oh, what's making them start to see things. So that gives me a lot of information. And then, of course, I have initial consultation with people and then go through where they're at, where they want to be, you know, what their goals are, what their intentions are, you know, what their history's been like, da-da-da. I mean, obviously I'm a naturopath as well, so I look at all sorts of aspects of their life. You know, I look at their microbiome. I look at, because, you know, there's a gut-brain connection. So I do integrate everything I work with. And then I create a bit of a personalized plan. I mean, there's some of that's automated because you can automate certain things because you kind of get the same questions or the same things you need to work with people. However, I really try to tailor it to the gift to the person. And you know, I mean, I work with gut health as well. I don't just work with trauma. However, yeah, it's one of the favorite things that I do love to work with, you know, and it's really important to use integrative work. I think a lot of people think you should just use one modality. I think it's that integrative, all these integrative modalities, because sometimes you need to do maybe hypnosis, or sometimes you might need to work on their diet or their gut and get them to detox first, or, you know, so that integration is really powerful. And then running retreats and things like that also helps to integrate as well. But, you know, I mean, because you asked me about the trauma too. I mean, a lot of people think trauma is an event. Trauma is really, it's more of an adaptation. It's not actually a disorder. Like something might have happened in someone's life, but it's actually how they've adapted that's the trauma.
Yeah.
You know, survival mechanism. So, you know, and so that's why sometimes you need to do work that's really trauma-informed for some people, because they're still in hypervigilant states. Yeah. You know, and so it really depends on the individual and whatnot. But I mean, trauma is part of a human experience for everyone.
Exactly.
Everyone experiences some kind of trauma. It's micro or macro trauma, you know. So it's about working with the nervous system and helping the adrenals to be okay and helping to reduce that stress response, teaching them coping mechanisms. And there's so many aspects that you can do, and of course the yoga. I mean,
I want to say, do you recommend Bikram yoga as well?
Always. Not everyone does it. A lot of people try to get people to do it. The yoga, honestly, I think it's such a, I mean, we like to say it's a one-stop shop, really, because it really works on so
it really works so many different
levels, you know. And you know, I'm always, you know, I'm trying to get people to do the yoga. Always, because it helps them to self.
You're a very strong and a very powerful woman. And you inspire many people and myself. Like, people don't know the backstory. So Rowena was like one of my first teachers in Melbourne in Australia. And I've told her so many times before that she literally changed the trajectory of my life. She used to kick my butt in class. And at the time, because I was in such a dark space in myself, I was like, she doesn't like me. She keeps picking on me. And then, like, it wasn't really until you left. And then we had, like, different teachers. I was like, oh, my God. Like, now I get it. Like, this woman is amazing. And she was pushing me. And I was like, you could see the light in myself at that time, which I just couldn't see. Like, I was just, like, you know, not in a good headspace at all. So I'm always going to be profoundly indebted to you for that. And you, I know that you help a lot of people, and your core drive always is from love. You inspire, you uplift, you challenge. Who inspires you?
It's interesting that you say who. I mean, there are people that inspire me, but, you know, ironically,
what
I believe my biggest inspiration is nature.
Because we are
the microcosm of the macrocosm. And yoga is a part of Ayurveda, right? I've studied Ayurvedic medicine. That's the thing I studied straight after yoga.
That's
what it's all about. I mean, Chinese medicine is the same. Shamanic medicine, kahuna, all the indigenous medicines really are understanding that we are, you know, we all talk about we are one, but we are one. I mean, when we die, we turn into dust, we turn into earth, you know, we actually disintegrate and we become nature. And I think nature is our teacher. Nature, everything in nature exists in harmony. You know, you've got the ecosystem is ecological, everything's flowing, everything's coexisting together, you know. And neuro-linguistic programming also talks about that, as I said, TCM and all these other aspects understand that concept. And so when I sit in nature, I get so many lessons from nature, you know, like the stillness. And then there's other times when it's like, it's, you know, the wind is whipping and wind is about to change, you know. So I think it really inspires me. And the more time I've spent in nature, the more I understand myself and that, you know, nature doesn't hold on, nature doesn't attach, all these things that we have as humans. So I think that's why it's my biggest inspiration. because it's not just, nature isn't just outside of us, which is what a lot of people think. Nature is us. Nature is within us. And we have the same qualities. We have earth. We have water. We have fire. We have all those elements in us.
Yeah.
And that's what these ancient traditional practices understood. And they lived with those principles. Yeah. You know, like when it's cold, you make yourself warm. You use warm, nourishing foods and things like that. That inspires me. However, I guess, you know, I think a lot of the great poets also, like Rumi and Khalil Gibran, Lao Tzu, these people inspire me too. Like, I just think they really have it, you know. And then, of course, one of the biggest inspirations that I always had was my teacher, Jason Wynn. And he's not alive anymore. However, he still inspires me. He was one of the most incredible yogis in our yoga field. He really walked his talk. He had such an education behind him. He had this incredible laughter and this incredible ability to connect to people. And, you know, so there's many teachers, I think, everywhere. Yeah. So it's hard to pinpoint and say one, but yeah, these are my biggest inspirations, you know.
We touched a little bit on the gut microbiome, and I'm just curious with your take on this, because one thing I've noticed that since after COVID and people got the jab, there's been a lot of people that have been having a lot of ailments in regards to the gut. And I just feel like, you know, this gut microbiome now is like the new buzzword going around. How do you think it's affecting us? And do you want to talk about that, or are you comfortable here?
Yeah, I'm happy. I used to lecture on the gut-brain connection at Nature Care College. So okay. That's why I always work with the gut, because, you know, there are more neurons in the gut than there are in the brain. Mm-hmm. If you look at the vagal nerve comes down and actually goes through every organ and then fans out into the gut. So, you know, the parasympathetic nerve, the switch for the parasympathetic the parasympathetic nervous system is that vagus nerve. And so it's our ability to rest and digest. So that's coming through the gut. Now, when we look at the microbiome, now the microbiome, we have certain DNA. We have DNA that, you know, have different functions. Mm-hmm. And but we also have this microbiome. So there's all these microbes that are doing jobs for us that our own DNA cannot do. Like, right. for example, producing, you know, nutrients even, like even calcium, certain nutrients actually are produced because of the microbiome. And if we look at all the hand sanitizing and all this like constant cleaning and cleansing, it's destroying our microbiome. And yeah. also, you know, there's a lot of fake meats. There's a lot of fake food. All of this is working against, you know, I talked about the ecology of nature. This is working against the ecology. And everything's about kill. Even there's a lot of, you know, you go to the doctor, if you might have a parasite or something, they'll often just give you killing. Let's just kill it. It's like, yeah. yes, but they're destroying your own microbiome. And so there's so much research to show we have actually killed off certain species.
Wow. You know,
there's a company in Australia that did a lot of research with some Papua New Guinea tribes, and they've created probiotics to actually help re-inoculate. Re-inoculate is like, so you're trying to put those same yeah. microbes into our own body. And they're trying to re-inoculate people with these particular microbes that we don't even produce anymore. And so, you know, and then we have you know, births that are no longer vaginal births. We have cesareans. We have constantly antibiotics and antibiotic. I mean, there's so much. It's, what they say is 2 years, it takes about 2 years from a course of antibiotics to then restore your gut microbiome after yeah. that. It's not just one thing. There's an impact happening from different varying things. And, of course, the microbiome need really good fiber. So that's like fruits and vegetables, and people are not eating the same level of fruits and vegetables that they really need to. I mean, there's just so many components to it, and stress plays a role yeah. in effect.
Hugely, yes. yeah.
Hugely. So, yeah.
So for someone to begin their healing journey, where should they go? Like where should they start? Like what is the process? And this is like very, obviously very general. Because there's a lot of different things when I say like healing, but where does one start? I think nature for me is like one of the key elements for the body, and also for you to mentally and emotionally, physically, psychologically. I think when you're in nature, you literally feel yourself decompress.
That's right.
That's when you get messages from your body, your conscious, your subconscious, of really what is wrong with you, like what is going on, what are you neglecting, what are you holding on to. I don't know, I'm not a therapist by any means, but to me that just seems like where I would start.
It's ironic that you say I'm not a therapist. I do believe we all are a therapist, because I think, you know, we have an innate survival mechanism. We have an innate, you know, we come, our ancestry comes from living on land.
Yeah.
True. There's an incredible book. I can't think of the name of the author right now, but there's an incredible book called I'm in Recovery from the Western World. And it's so
fantastic. That book. Yeah.
Amazing. It's written by a psychologist in America, and she does a lot of work with the American Indian tribes really work with trauma. And she talks a lot about domestication and how that's really affected our entire way of living, and then, you know, talked about trauma coming from that and things like that. We were born on land. Like we know people say we've become more civilized. I don't believe we have. I think we've gone back, in my opinion, you know. And people have lost touch with who they are. They've lost touch with nature. They've lost touch with that, and they think, oh, I'm going to go to the park, or I'm going to go for a quick swim. I'm talking like really spending time in nature. It grounds you. It offers you, as I said, it offers you teachings.
Yeah.
And so you're right. I mean, your intuition really kicked in, that you know that that's actually where we need to be. We become freer. We become more open. We become more clear. We're able to really ground down and get away from the stress and the buzz of, you know, the energy that goes on in the cities when we really take time to get out in nature. But one of the things I think too is to get curious.
Yeah.
You know, curiosity, because we tend to reject. It's a very normal phenomena of human nature to reject things that are different to us. We marginalize, you know, we have what we call our primary and our secondary identity. We all relate to the, oh, this is who I am. I'm not that. I'm this. Yeah, and whenever we say I'm this and I'm not that, we're actually marginalizing because we are whole. So
we're everything.
Shadow, or they talk about the mirrors, parts they don't want to look at themselves, whatever you want to call it, the terminology. So when we're, I think when we're going through any kind of resistance, because I think all trauma or all pain or, you know, stress is resistance in a way.
Right. Yeah.
It's resistance, it's attaching or non, you know, not wanting to detach from where we are, we resist, we hold on, all those aspects. And so I think if we get curious and we start to explore other parts of us, that is a really powerful way to start to work on ourselves. And becoming mindful. I mean, mindful is mindfulness. It's focused attention without judgment. That's the meaning of mindfulness.
Yeah.
You're taking the time to see and to experience. And, you know, so for example, if you're an emotional eater, you take the time to notice, okay, when am I eating? What are the patterns? Yeah. What's actually happening? What am I feeling? Because so many times we're in our heads. Yeah. You know, we have parts of our brain. We have the neocortex, which is that logical, rational part of the brain where we make decisions from. But the part of the brain that's actually rules our decisions really is our limbic brain. That's the emotional storehouse of the brain. And that's our faith. That's our spirituality. And then you've got, you know, the fight or flight response as well. But you've got the somatic body. So it's, and there's more and more research, particularly in the trauma field, where it's about felt sense or the somatic body, and it's that time to feel. And that's why yoga practices and meditation are so powerful, because they bring you back into that body space where you feel what's going on, you know. I think these are really good places to start. And, you know, alone time. People say, oh, I'm lonely. But really they're lonely because they're sitting at home watching TV or they're spending time alone. That deep reflection is alone time, and that's in nature or writing in a journal. Like, there's so many little things that we can do just to create routines so that we win. I think a lot of people set up routines in their life that set them up to fail, you know. They stop their full of junk food, they go out drinking, they stay in jobs they hate for fear that they're not going to have the money, they watch mind-numbing TV shows that brainwash them, you know. Get away from war, violence, horror movies, all those things are desensitizing us to actually these horrendous things in our lives. And reading books is great, learning about yourself, you know, doing the inner work, which people I think are scared of. A lot of people are scared to look beneath that superficial level. And I'm not trying to say that in an offensive way, that I'm attacking anyone. I don't in that way, because I was one of those people too, obviously. I think that's part of the journey of life, right? I do believe it's a spiritual journey that we're on, and spiritualism is about self-realization. It's about learning about who you are. It's about learning
Can you share some stories? I wanted you to share some. I mean, because your teaching life is very vast in Bikram Yoga and everything that you do. Can you just give me a few stories of people whose lives have completely changed from the yoga and different modalities that you've been
doing? From the yoga?
Yeah, just to give people a little bit of sometimes change is hard, but there's the other side of change. It's like a whole different world.
Yeah.
And sometimes people just get blocked to take that first initial step. Because I have so many people say to me, oh, I really want to try Bikram Yoga, but I'm so scared. I'm scared of the heat. I don't think I can do the whole class. Like, they just bring up all of these fears and rejections instead of, like, why not just give it a go? Like, I'll just be there and then, like, what happens through that point?
Yeah. So one of the stories that I love to tell is there was a guy who actually was in LA, and I don't know his name. I don't remember his name. This is a long time ago I've been teaching for nearly 20 years now.
Yeah.
And because obviously I was working on the training and I was spending a lot of time in LA, and there was this guy and he was in a wheelchair.
Oh, wow.
And he was told that he was never going to walk again. And
what was his injury? Was it spinal or?
I think it was quadriplegic. Like, I'm trying to remember the actual details, but I remember the man. And that man, like, so his father heard about Bikram Yoga. This is like right in the early days. And I heard about Bikram yoga, and there was a seminar that was in one of the cities. I didn't remember what city it is, but anyway, so there was a seminar that Bikram was running, and for some reason this father just knew to take this guy to the seminar. And so he did. Oh, no, I've frozen. Oh, no.
Don't worry. We'll just keep going. I'll just use the recording. It's fine.
Oh, you can still hear it?
Back again.
Okay, cool. All right. So, yeah, so basically Bikram said to him, you know, you've just got to trust me, and you've got to do what I tell you to do. And all Bikram would make him do, like he was sitting in the wheelchair in the class, and Bikram would do the breathing exercises, you know, we do all this sweat and stuff.
Breathing,
Bikram would make him just bring his eyes up and down. That's all he could do, move his head. And he would just bring his eyes up and down, up and down, up and down, like everyone else doing the breathing, you know, breathing in, breathing out, you know, doing all that. And then over time, then his head began to move.
Wow.
And eventually he's got his hands here.
Wow.
And then he's like, eventually, now 4 years later, 4 years later, I remember Doug Welsh was there, and Doug was like, oh, my God, it's the guy. And he was walking in the chair.
No way.
I've told that story so many times. It's one of the most inspirational stories, you know. Yeah. I mean, there's so many stories. When you teach for this amount of time, you hear story after story.
Yeah.
I mean, there's stories I've seen where people have had x-rays where their spines be completely, like, fused or, like, you know, complete scoliosis, complete issues, and then all of a sudden they've done nothing different, and then they've just done Bikram yoga, and all of a sudden they get the x-rays and their spines are straight again. I mean, I know my story. I had rheumatoid arthritis. I was told by the rheumatologist, you're never going to heal. You're going to have to take anti-inflammatories for the rest of your life. And he laughed at me. I said to him, I'm not going to do your this medicine thing. I'm going to fix myself normally. And I didn't know how to do that in the beginning. I was reading book after book and trying to find out, okay, what do I do? And then, you know, when I found the yoga, I mean, I could barely move when I did my first class.
Wow.
And you can ask my teachers, my knee was the size of a football. Like, my knee was this
big.
No
way.
I've got photos to show. And you can't even see that I have a knee. It doesn't even look like I have a knee. It's just this swollen, like, big chunk of leg. And I could barely get down. I could barely bring my legs together in awkward pose. I couldn't camel pose. I remember my leg was straight on one side and I was bending one knee, and I was so scared. I remember being so scared if I bend my knee, it's going to make it worse, because one time that happened. And within a month, every part of the swelling had gone from my knee.
Wow.
And I don't have rheumatoid arthritis at all. What happens when you have rheumatoid arthritis, they tell you that if you've got rheumatoid factor, because you'll have, like, in your blood, you'll have what's called C-reactive proteins. That's an idea that there's definitely inflammation in the body. There's all these blood tests that they'll give you. And one of those blood tests is rheumatoid factor. And they said to me, the rheumatologist said to me, you'll always have rheumatoid arthritis because you've got rheumatoid factor. Well, I don't have rheumatoid factor anymore. I don't actually have it. I've never taken meds. I mean, okay, I had a couple of steroid shots once when it was just, I was in that much pain over Christmas and I had run out of my herbal painkillers, and I was like, I am so desperate. I need to get rid of this pain. But other than that, I did not take any medicine. I refused to take the medicine. I refused. And
your practice is phenomenal. Like, your process, like, I'm going to share them as well, because your practice is insane.
It's not as good as it was, but, you know, I'm 50 now. But, you know, it doesn't, you know, the more you practice too, the more you forget. You don't worry about the postures look like by the end, you know. I mean, the object of the yoga is you, not the posture. That's what we're trained to remember, right?
And I think as you get older, it just becomes more about having mobility and joining the body.
Yeah, that's right.
In the body,
that's
like, right. Wake up, that's and right. Good and strong, yeah. And you're not. Yeah. When you see people as you get older, like how they walk and how they hold themselves,
yeah.
And always like, oh, thank God, like I found Bikram yoga.
Like, yes.
A secret key to human vitality.
Yeah. Agree. You know what I love is when someone hasn't come for a long time and then they just somehow just seem to be called back to it. And then they come into the change room after and they're like, Oh, that's what I've been missing in my life. Oh, my God, now I feel human again. I'm like, yeah, I feel like that if I've missed one day of practice.
I feel like a lot of people are coming back, and particularly after COVID as well. I think people are now like, okay, my health is my priority. not my work, not my money, not my job, but my health. And I feel like a lot of people are coming back now for the right reasons, not because of like, this is the cool thing to do, but they really want to deeply work on their mind, body, soul connection.
That's right. And oh, sorry, you go.
No. I think it's really exciting because I think it's a new flow of people coming to and re-coming back into Bikram yoga that really makes me excited.
Yes. And I think you touched on it beautifully when you said mind, body, soul, because when we hear the word health, often people can have a conjured up image that health is like, you know, a fit looking body, you know, but it's not about just that. It's about the mind. It's about the state of mind. It's about how do you cope when there's lots of traffic? Do you just lose your, do you lose it? Or it would calm, you know, like it's, that's your health. That's your health and that's your wealth. You know, you can have all the, everything else in the world, but if you don't have your health, you actually, you've got no quality of life. And I think people are realizing that more and more. So, you know, that's the gift, I guess, of all the lockdowns and all the crazy things that we went through. You have to look at the silver lining for everything, right? And that's one of them, is that people tend to realize what's really more important in their life, you know?
So, I'd like to ask you, through here in the podcast, and I mean, you've given us so much wisdom and so many bombs of little wisdom that I'm gonna kind of pick out and share with everyone. But words of wisdom that you've been offered, or words of wisdom that you've arrived to, you're turning 50 this weekend, so look like exactly the same, like I don't know, it's been a long time, I don't know, maybe 15 16 17 years,
I think it's
exactly the same. So what has been your most inspirational, or I don't know, words of wisdom that you've learned along the way in your journey so far?
You know, I think whatever's coming to mind, I'm just going to trust whatever's coming into my mind.
Absolutely.
I believe that life is beautiful and horrible at the same time. Like, and I don't mean to sound terrible, because it's the yin and yang of life. Ha is sun, tha is moon. And I think I wrote about this in my book years ago. I think there's a myth, I guess, that if you start doing healing or working on yourself, that everything in life is going to be perfect and A-okay. Yeah. And I think that there's no quick fix. It's a lifestyle. You know, I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I've come to learn along my life, is that things will definitely get better in your life. You know, when you really work on yourself, you have a better respect for yourself, you have a better love for yourself, you're able to communication style improves with you and other people, and your relationships improve because that relationship with yourself is number one. And you develop that. However, I feel like, it's a journey rather than it's a journey and a lifestyle. It's not just like, okay, we're going to go and do yoga for, you know, 1 year and look, my life is perfect now, I don't need it anymore. Learning that everything is a lifestyle, and it's a new way of living and a new way of being. You know, we live in a world where people are kind of used to going to the doctor and getting a pill. Yeah. And going, what I need to do. It's like, no, it's not about that. It's about looking at, you know, what can you do to start making small daily steps that can keep changing your life, you know, bit by bit, bit by bit. And as I said earlier, life is, in my opinion, you don't have to take on my opinion, but my opinion is that life is a spiritual journey, and we never got to practice it.
Yes.
Come here and there's no rehearsal. We come here, we don't really know how the hell to navigate life. We're kind of figuring it out as we go. And so we do have to have that level of compassion for ourselves. But I feel like there's a ladder, I guess in the traditional cultures, they call it initiations, you know, and you're and you're going through like different challenges all the time in your life, and you're kind of getting initiated in these challenges. And I think that's why Bikram yoga is so powerful. I know I've gone back to Bikram yoga, but that's a powerful initiation in my, because it's hard, it's challenging, it's tough. Yeah. It teaches you skills to go through these next level initiations, you know, like life, and it teaches you
through the fear as well. I feel like
it teaches you to push through the fear. It teaches you to push through, and not even push through in an aggressive way.
No.
Pushing through the fact that you're being still and breathing.
And I love the mirror, the practice that you practice to the mirror, to me, was the most intimidating thing ever. And for a lot of people, and you'll see that a lot of students, they come in, they look down to the floor, they can't even look in the mirror. And then after eventually a few months, a few weeks, they can look in the mirror, and then you look in your own eyes. And then you begin to see yourself, not just like physically from the media, but you get to see who you are.
Yeah, that's right.
And peeling away all of these layers of, I mean, the first time for me, I think I was like crying. I've cried so much in a Bikram yoga.
I love a good yoga cry because it relates
all of the layers and layers and layers and years of just like misinformation. And then you come back to your own guide. I think you also discover your own inner guide that has been.
I totally agree that that's the self-realization component. And I think life, you know, I always say life is yoga. Like life is the first day of my teacher training. There was a song that was played. It was called the Om Song, and it was Bikram singing and another lady, and I don't remember who the lady is. But that those words in that, the lyrics in that song were yoga is life, and you're coming home to yourself. And I bawled when I heard those lyrics because it was like, oh God, I'm finally stepping into this truth. This is so true. Like I could feel the truth of it just through my whole body. And, you know, like you said, it's challenging sometimes. I said life is beautiful and horrible at the same time. Mm-hmm. But if you can see the gift, it's what we got. Went back to what we said, the gift of life. Like it's the gift. Mm-hmm. The challenges are our gifts. And when we see that, the challenge of the yoga is the biggest gift for us. It's showing us where we're weaker. It's showing us where we're also stronger that we might not have even noticed about ourselves. It's showing us so much about us. It's telling us the truth of who we are so we can step into a place of power, mm-hmm. of empowerment, of self-love. And when we and it sounds as no cliche as it sounds, when we actually are able to love who we are, which I believe yoga's given me and all the other things I've done, is that then we can actually be that human being that we are. We don't worry about what other people think about us. We're actually fully able to step into our light and be who we are. And that is a beacon for others.
Yeah, for sure.
Beacon for others to shine them, people permission.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's it. Anytime you embark on a path of healing or whatever that might be for you, it's personal for all of us. This is how we create the better world, and we all want a better world. I mean, who doesn't want a better world to live in? I think this is how we do it. We work on ourselves. Gandhi was right. Be the change you wish to see in the world. Like, look at yourself. Go inward.
I love it. Where can people find you in Sydney to practice with you, to take a Bikram class?
I'm in the Northern Beaches in Sydney. I actually have my clinic inside the Bikram Yoga and Wellness. So it's Bikram Yoga Brooklyn. Yeah, so it's 10 there's 10 clinicians in that clinic.
Wow, so it's a big thing.
It's a huge warehouse. We have 2 yoga studios and then we have 10 other rooms. So it's great. So that's where I work on person, but I also do online and a lot of online as well. Yeah.
So my dream is to come back to Australia and take one of your classes.
I would love that. I would love that. Oh, what a gift.
Yeah, that would be awesome for me. I can't wait. Well, thank you so much for giving up your time. I know you're an incredibly busy woman, and I just want to say happy birthday. It's actually Bikram's birthday today or yesterday.
Yeah,
he just turned 80. So I think it's a nice time that I've just reconnected with you, and you're also having your birthday. So I feel like it's a celebration. So happy birthday. Have a wonderful time. And thank you so much for coming here and sharing your knowledge and your gift and your energy and your love and your inspiration.
My pleasure. It's a gift to be on here. And I wish you all the best in your podcast. And I hope it reaches so many thousands and thousands of people so that people can hear your message and change their lives for the better.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for doing what you do.